The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is SB Nation Radio,
the next generation of sports radio.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour featuring Bill Harmon.
Good shot.
It's about time.
Hey, it is about time. I mean, I just couldn't get the ball in the hole. I wanted to, but I just couldn't do it.
The Charlie Epps Golf Hour is powered by Insperity with the golf doctor, Charlie Epps. Here's your host, John Granato.
Good morning, everybody. What a morning. Saturday morning of the Ryder Cup. It's kind of like waking up at Christmas. What's going to happen? What a day we had on Friday. Incredible golf. Incredible drama. I'm joined this morning by Bill Harmon. And Bill, what more can you say about a day of golf that we saw yesterday?
Well, you know, every year the, my voice is a little scratchy this morning, but every year you think that the Ryder Cup might not be as big a deal as it's been in the previous years, and then yesterday comes along, and the quality of golf, the Europeans complaining about the crowds, they seem to be able to get under our skin that way. Their comeback, Charlie, which you have to give them great credit for.
Magnificent.
And then they open up this morning with two birdies on the first hole with Mickelson and Rory.
You know, it's sport at its finest. It's an incredible event. I mean, you have the Super Bowl, or you have the World Series, you have everything, and the athletes always perform. It's magnificent. But we're going to talk a little more here. But we have a special guest because of Bill Harmon, and this gentleman is you know, you look at his resume, Bill, and it's a storybook, you know. Resume. He's done it all. And Jay Haas just captained the winning President's Cup. I mean, he has been successful on the tour for years and years. He was ranked in the top 20 of the world when he was 50 years old. All because of you.
Yeah, no, I think that if you look at the totality of Jay's career, he was never a great player, always a very good player. But, you know, he won the Bobby Jones Award, the Payne Stewart Award, the Golf Family of the Year, President's Cup Captain. So when you look at the totality of his body of work, it's somewhat of a superstar resume when you think of the awards that he's won as a person, his playing career, and just how he handles himself. And we have to throw in there the father of a son who is a very successful tour player. So when you look at Jay Haas's body of work as a person, as a player, it's pretty darn solid, and we're going to be very lucky to have him on the show today because he'll have some insight on what goes on in these matches, playing in them, and then what goes on with the captain's decisions because he had to make them as a captain of the President's Cup. So we're very fortunate to have Jay today.
So I want everybody who's listening to call a friend and tell them that Jay Haas is going to come on our air, SB Nation, the Charlie Epps Golf Hour at 8:15, and we'll get the inside information on about captain's picks, about strategy. It's going to be a fun day on the golf course up in Minnesota. It's unbelievable. I mean, I can't say enough. So if you had to sum up yesterday's afternoon play with them being whitewashed, them being Europe, whitewashed in the morning, for them to come back and recover 3-3-1 is incredible.
Yes, it was. It's just game on. It's the Ryder Cup. The quality of the players on both teams is exceptional. And I do believe that statement that the rookies aren't really rookies, because to make these teams, you have to be such a good player, you've had to win tournaments. So the rookies today seem to be a little bit different than the rookies of yesteryear. So, for instance, Thomas Peters won the NCAA championship. He went to the University of Illinois. Matthew Fitzpatrick, I believe, won the U.S. Amateur. So they're used to playing in America, so that's not a big change for them. And they're winners. They're tour winners. So if you're good enough to win on a tour event on either tour, then you're pretty seasoned already, and you've already been put under the gun, and you've already performed. So I think the quality of play has been fantastic. I really do.
Were you surprised at any of the pairings by either side yesterday morning or yesterday afternoon?
I would have never put Jimmy Walker and Zach Johnson together, and I would have been wrong. But, you know, they win one match, and you assume that it's a terrific pairing, and it could be. The Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed, they win in the morning, and everybody's got them as a superstar pairing, and then they get waxed in the afternoon. So it's very, very difficult to win all these matches and to keep winning, because the quality of your opponents is incredible. So it's just, I can't tell you how excited I am for today. I just think this is a, it always exceeds my expectations, and my expectations are always high for this match.
Well, the other thing that surprised me, if you know, the whitewash of the morning session was the comeback victory, and you talk about winning ugly, is Ricky Fowler and Phil Mickelson. I mean, they hit it all over the place. And I would have, you know, thought that Phil would have been a better foursomes, four-ball player, because, you know, he doesn't hit fairways, but he does make birdies. But that was just an incredible comeback. And go ahead.
I agree with you, Charlie. I thought that was a very odd pairing. I thought it could have been a devastating loss for the Europeans. And then Rory came out in the afternoon and played flawless golf and just played beautiful. So the heart and soul of both of these teams was evident yesterday.
Unbelievable how far they hit it. And we got to go with Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth. They got the show going, and they beat a very, very formidable team in the morning.
Yeah, and then they play the team again, and they got it handed to them. These things are not easy to predict. Once again, the 24 phenomenal golfers that really, there might be a half a stroke difference in their stroke average from top to bottom. So I never really think there are upsets in these matches. I just think the quality of the players, of the 24 players collectively, is so good that one team gets hot or gets putting good, and they can steamroll the other team.
Well, you know, in your experience, and you've been there on both President's Cup, Ryder Cup, the emotion, golf is a game of emotion. Nicklaus always said that, in controlling emotions. And yourself, as a vice president of transportation during these events, it's called a caddy, but you're a confidant more than anything. What were your nerves yesterday?
Oh, I'm very excited for this. I'm jacked up. I can't imagine. Well, I've caddied in them, so I have a feel for the energy. The energy is difficult to control. I think that's the hard thing. The crowds and the energy is unlike anything you've ever experienced. So you have to. I know myself as a caddy. I always prepared before I went out to try to be a non-reactor, not react either way to good or bad, and to just try to keep an even keel. It gets a lot harder to keep an even keel at the Ryder Cup, but the galleries and the partisanship and things like that. So it's very, very difficult to kind of stay calm and even. So the players have to deal with it, because they all say every hole is like the last hole of a major. So when you think of that, every hole is like the last hole of a major championship when you're in contention. So you have that every single hole all week. So it's just a terrific event. And you've got to give the PGA credit. They pull off a terrific event every single year.
Well, the morning has started, and U.S. has won down in the first match. McIlroy is continuing his hot streak. They've started off birdie-birdie in the alternate shot format.
And McIlroy has a little edge to him. You know, he's
big time.
Yeah, he has a big time edge, and he doesn't mind showing it. I think it's great. It makes for a great event. You know, we can criticize people for maybe how they act or not act, but the fact of the matter is, it makes it a heck of a lot more fun to watch, doesn't it?
Oh man, I mean it definitely is there, and you know, I think. I like Reed. Reed has the edge on that I like, and we're going to see how that works out this morning in these opening rounds. But wow, Bill, we're going to break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to have last year's President's Cup captain, Jay Haas. So you all stay tuned. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on SB Nation. Live from Houston, Texas. Y'all stay with us. Bye-bye.
This is SB Nation Radio, and you're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity, with the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, and Bill Harmon. Here's your host, John Granato.
Welcome back, everybody, and it's Ryder Cup Saturday, and we're really having a lot of fun. It's nerve-wracking, but fun. But right now, we are going to be joined by a very, very special person in golf who has really done it all. But more importantly, his best friend and caddy is Bill Harmon, who is on the show. And Bill, why don't you introduce our next guest?
Well, our next guest was the 2015 President's Cup captain, nine-time PGA Tour winner, nearly 20 tour events on the Champions Tour, three-time leading money winner on the Champions Tour, and a great friend and always a good friend of the program, Jay Haas. Jay, welcome, and thank you for coming on this morning.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Good to be on.
Jay, are you nervous?
I am nervous. It's unbelievable watching this stuff. I can't imagine what these guys are going through. I guess I can. I did it a couple times, and it is your senses are heightened like you can't believe. You do things that you wouldn't do normally, both on and off the golf course. And I was just watching a little bit of the start here, and Peter's, made the birdie, a topping birdie there, in the first match against Ricky and Phil, and he put his finger up to his mouth. You know, I've probably never done that in his life before, when he was playing golf. So, it's just amazing what happens in these matches, and it's friendly, but neither team wants to give an inch. So it gets pretty intense.
Jay, take us into the mind of the captain and the ebb and flow of being a captain. You'll put a pairing together in the morning and they win. And it's hard to sit them down and they win conventionally. And you put them out together that next afternoon and they get waxed. So even as a captain, you go from, boy, this was a super pairing. I'm really smart. And then in the afternoon they get beaten. You go, oh, maybe I'm not that smart. What do I do with them tomorrow? Give us a little bit of the ebb and flow of the captain's picks. I mean, just the pairing, excuse me.
Golf is such a hard game to predict, and you have these great plans about, who's going to play together, and, if they win, then we'll keep them together, or we're going to switch them up just a little bit. And, you have these ideas in your head of what might happen and how you might go forward, but it's such a hard game to predict, like I said. And if they run away with a match and go, we win 6-5, they're on fire. They're playing well. They're getting along well. And so it's pretty hard to break them up. But then all of a sudden, like you say, they get beat in the afternoon. Now you second guess maybe your next day pairing and how to handle that. And in this case, when you're sitting four people every session, it really gets difficult because the guys want to play number one, and they understand that they're not going to get to play every match probably, but it makes it harder on the captain when you have to make that decision of who you sit. But it's just, when after the fact, you look like a genius or you look like an idiot, and it all depends on whether the guys hit some fairways and greens and make a few putts or don't. And, the captains, I think, get probably not enough credit, but then certainly all the blame, and that's, I guess that's the way it should be.
As a captain, how much information did you want from the players, and how much did you pay attention to them with their likes or dislikes and who they want to play with, or was there that banner going back and forth? I know Mickelson is very opinionated, and he's going to kind of get his way, it looks like, at times. As a captain, did you weigh the players' information a lot?
Oh, without question, I did, yes. And certainly Phil, to me, he's that proverbial coach on the floor, so to speak. He does have a lot of opinions, and most of them are very well thought out and very spot on. But then he gets a little crazy after a while. You kind of have to, temper what you listen to. And he is so experienced. I think this is his, 21st match in a row or something like that? It's crazy, 22nd. So obviously he has more experience than anyone playing in this match today. So you listen to somebody like him. There's guys that say, look, I just want to play. You put me with whoever, I'm good to go. There's other guys who say, here's my two guys who I want to play with. And they don't say, I don't want to play with this guy or that guy, but you kind of read between the lines and realize that, maybe they're not as comfortable with certain players on the team. A guy like Zach Johnson, he'll play with anybody, doesn't matter. Brant Snedeker, he'll play with anybody. Ricky Fowler, you can put him with anybody. And they're going to give you the 100% regardless. And so you listen a little bit, and you just weigh all the options and try to do the best you can.
Jay, when you were playing Ryder Cups and you were being sat down out of a match, did the captain typically tell you you weren't going to play, or did you just look at the lineup card and you didn't see your name and you said, well, looks like I'm a cheerleader today?
Well, yeah. A little bit of both. My first Ryder Cup is in '83, and Jack Nicklaus was the captain, and there was really not much interaction in regards to pairings with him. I was my first Ryder Cup, I was probably, 29 years old or something like that, so I didn't feel like I could tell him anything, and nor would he listen to me if I told him something. So, and I was one of those guys, look, I'll do whatever it takes. I'll play one. I'll play five times, whatever you want me to do, I will do, and I'll play with whoever. Now, I will say that Curtis Strange and I were on the team our first Ryder Cup together then, and we begged Jack, look, just put us together. And the rule of thumb is, as you can see, the international team is kind of doing it where they're sprinkling in these rookies with a veteran player, Henrik Stenson, and, taking the younger guys and playing, Sergio taking the younger guy and playing with him. And I think that's kind of the thought through the years of who gets to play with each other. And we went out as rookies, rookie Ryder Cup players, and won our match. So that was, we kind of overrided him perhaps in that session. But most of the time, you talk it out, and now certainly the players are getting more involved. I think they want to be more involved, and I think the captains want them to be more involved. They want to hear, they want them to be happy. A happy golfer, he's going to probably play better. I don't think the coach should be in a room by himself, the captain, and making these plans and then just kind of throwing the names out there, and the guy's kind of going, whoa, I didn't see that coming. So I wanted, in my case, I wanted to hear from the veteran players. I wanted to hear from Zach Johnson. I wanted to hear from Phil Mickelson. And I wanted to hear from the guys who had been there before and had seen firsthand what was a successful pairing and what wasn't.
Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is Jay Haas. Bill Harmon is on the line from California. I am Charlie Epps. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on SB Nation, live from Houston, Texas. We're going to break away for a couple of advertisements, and when we get back, we've got more questions for Captain Haas, and Mr. Harmon will supply a lot of his comments. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
This is SB Nation Radio, and you're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity, with the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, and Bill Harmon. Here's your host, John Granato.
Charlie Epps, live from Houston, Texas, talking golf on Ryder Cup Saturday with none other than Jay Haas, the past captain of the President's Cup, Bill Harmon from California, and the thing that I've got to ask Jay, and you went to Wake Forest. You were great friends with a gentleman by the name of Arnold Palmer. Your brother is the golf coach at Wake Forest. You know, we lost Arnold this week, and everybody has been honoring him, and we've heard some great stories. What's your best Arnold Palmer story that you keep close to your heart?
Maybe the first time I played in the Masters, I was paired with him in the first round. And 1976, Arnold was still very competitive, and the largest gallery at Augusta that day. And I just remember being as nervous as I've ever been, on the range prior to the round. I probably hit 30 drivers before I teed off, just trying to hit one solid and make sure it didn't go in the press tent or something over to the right or in the ninth fairway. And I managed to hit a good drive. And I just remember Arnold being, just a regular guy. And he didn't physically put his arm around me, but I could feel that he was, working on his game, but also, making sure that I was comfortable. And I do remember we both came up short on number 9, and we were chipping from down below, which is kind of the cardinal sin, don't be short there. And I hit this chip shot, and it got up just to the top of the crest there, just short of the pin, and I kind of slumped, I wasn't a very good shot. And he looked at me, I looked at him, and he goes, "You better go mark it." And about that time, here comes my ball right down at my feet. And so he knew where that ball was going to end up, but anyway, it was just kind of, just two guys going out to play, and I think that's what separated Arnold or kind of put him up there at the top. Is just he was just a regular guy and just wanted to be that regular guy. He was the king, but he made everybody feel like they were special, and that's kind of my special memory, I guess. I've had a ton and been around him a lot, on and off the golf course, and he was just himself too. He didn't try to be somebody he wasn't, but everyone loved him, and he loved being around people. He was just so personable to everyone, and kind of what you saw was what you got.
The king.
Wasn't there a situation where you met him at his house one time? You were doing something up at the Trobe, and Kit, his wife, said, he's up in his bedroom dressing. He wanted you to go up in the see him in his bedroom. And you're thinking to yourself, I'm not going to go in Arnold's bedroom. And sure enough, yeah. He wanted you to come into his bedroom as he's getting dressed.
When he said, go on back there, this was a long time ago when Winnie was still alive, and he said, "Oh, I know Arnold would want to see you. Go on back. He's getting dressed for dinner or whatever." And I'm thinking, wow, this is maybe the most awkward situation I've ever been in the Arnold Palmer's bedroom. But went back there, and he was getting his shirt on, and we talked and everything. He kind of explained. That was a fundraiser that he had asked Peter Jacobson and I to do, and what a foursome we had with Peter and Arnold, and Jack Nicklaus was the fourth, and we played a little fundraiser there at La Trobe Country Club, and just to be included in that foursome was a highlight for me.
Great stories. Okay, let's get back to the Ryder Cup. The play is underway. The matches are being played. The captains, you know, you've done your job for this morning, but now you've got to get ready for the afternoon. Have they already set the pairings in your mind, or what is a captain doing? Is he going to wait until a certain time to make his decisions on what's going to happen in the afternoon?
Charlie, I would think that Davis has at least three of the groups really firm, and he's already let them know, you guys are going, get ready, all that stuff. And, that could change if somebody just plays very, very poorly or really great, you know, and you can't fit them. But I think, the players want to know how to get ready, when to prepare. They don't want to be on the fence and saying you may or may not play. I think that's a little disconcerting to the players. So, Davis has probably spoken to these guys who are sitting. The U.S. team really likes to play everybody, I think, get them into the matches. And I don't think anybody's going to sit all day today. But, again, if somebody's really making a mess of things, then maybe the player might even say, look, I know you're planning on playing me this afternoon. I don't have it. You know, just get somebody else. I've got to work on my game for tomorrow. But, I think Davis has a plan. And, again, that's one of the things that talking to all the players and getting their input and having this so-called task force, I think that's what the players want. They want as much information as possible. They don't want to be in the dark, and they want to be a part of it and feel fully invested in what's going on.
You know, watching the Ryder Cup right now, Mickelson and Fowler do not have it. They are hitting the ball literally all over the golf course. They're about to go three down here after five. When you have it in your mind, Jay, that, you know, a pairing is pretty good, let's say, and then they go out and they play so poorly, I recall that at the President's Cup, you made a decision the second day to play Jimmy Walker in the afternoon because Jimmy hadn't been playing well, but you didn't want to destroy his confidence by sitting him down for two straight matches because you needed him to play good on Sunday. There's all these little kind of subplots that are going on in the captain's mind dealing with the player's psyche. It must be very, very difficult to sit somebody for two matches in one day.
Oh, I think without question it is, and you're right. Jimmy didn't seem to have it as good as he can play in the President's Cup in South Korea. But guys were saying this guy here is not playing great and everything. But I couldn't do that to him personally. I was putting myself in a player's shoes and thinking, man, my captain's not showing me any confidence and all that. But, you have to do what's best for the team. I get all that and everything. But I think, too, the best place to work it out is on the golf course. If you're struggling, you go to the practice tee, yeah, maybe you can get a little something. But aiming a ball and, the dealing with the results of that aim and your swing on the golf course, there's no substitute for that. So I think the players want to play. And, again, I go back to the deal about sitting players. I just think that's the hardest thing about it, and the players want to play. I'd like to see more matches. I think everybody should get to play in these matches. I don't agree with certainly four per session. That is so many people to sit, and it's a hard thing. But it's hard to argue with the success of the Ryder Cup and what these matches have become.
Well, Jay, that's why they pay you guys the big bucks to be captains. You got to have some decisions
to
make.
That's exactly right.
That's
right.
That is for sure. But the other roles that have become very important, and you go back to 99 when Davis Love went over and really got Justin Leonard out of the doldrums and to go on to win his match, which really propelled the biggest comeback in the history of Ryder Cup. And the role of the vice captains, and heck, we've got five of them on the American squad. What, as a captain, what do you tell your vice captains to to do during the round? What are their roles? And I think that's an important part of what's going to happen today. And as we see Mickelson go three down, I mean, somebody better go and talk to these boys. But you know, we're going to go to a break here very shortly. But that's the next question that I'd like you to answer: the vice captains, how important they are. This is the Charlie Ebbs Golf Hour. We'll be right back with Jay Haas and Bill Harmon.
This is SB Nation Radio, and you're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity, with the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, and Bill Harmon. Here's your host, John Granato.
We're back with Jay Haas, and before the break, we were talking about the role of the vice captain on the team, on the squad. What role do they play, Jay?
Well, I think there's a certain confidence that they can give to each group that's out there. As you see Tom Lehman walking with a group and Jim Furyk walking with a group and Tiger walking with a group. And I think it's just nice to see a familiar face out there. And it's also great for the captain because he can't be everywhere. This is not in a stadium or on a court where you can watch all the action yourself. You've got to trust those eyes and ears of your assistant captains, and listen to them. They'll tell you the straight story. You know, they'll say this guy's really playing great, or this guy doesn't have it, and that can help maybe formulate your pairings for the next day. I do think sometimes you can get, as they say, too many cooks in the kitchen, but I think Davis has got some guys out there who are very experienced and very knowledgeable about these matches, and I think they'll shoot him straight. And I think Davis too has got it formulated in his head what he's going to do, and not much is going to change his opinion of these afternoon matches. But it's great. You know, it's something that I didn't see a lot of. I didn't see a lot of golf yesterday, but I have not seen and heard much about Tiger. And I think everybody thought he was going to be some kind of a distraction. But everything I've read says just the opposite, that he's been great with the team. And, you know, I think he can only help rub off on the confidence that the guys have and how to handle these matches. And maybe they can get inside his head a little bit and get a little bit from what he's and how he's been so successful through the years.
It's funny, when I see Tiger, he's usually watching a group that the Europeans have a rookie in. It's almost like there's a game out there to make it even harder on the European rookie. But every time I've seen him, he was watching a group. And typically the vice captain or assistant captain stay with the same group, as I recall, Jay. So
yes,
I'm just assuming that's probably not a coincidence.
Well, and I'm sure that he's making himself known to that rookie player too, you know, making it pretty obvious that that this guy, who's arguably the best player that ever lived, is 25 feet away watching me, watching my grip, watching my swing, and I'm sure Tiger's using every bit of that to his advantage or to our advantage, and maybe trying to intimidate this young player. So, hey, more power to him. That's one of the reasons he's out there.
Now, Jay, my last question, and I'm going to turn it over to Bill. You know, golf is a game of emotion and nerves, and it's fun to compete. We've got a lot of listeners out there that are going to be competing for their club championship or for the third flight or something like that. What would you tell to people that how to handle your nerves in those situations?
Well, what I tell, say, my son Bill when he's playing well or it's in the hunt, in the last group, things like that, to try to embrace that feeling. You know, it's I think, you know, I'm a competitor. All these guys are competitors. And if you're playing for something, whether it be the third flight of your club championship or whatever, you still want to win, right? So enjoy that part of it. You know, don't be afraid of it. And the worst thing can happen, you could hit a bad shot. You could lose the match. You know, big deal. It's not life or death. But embrace the challenge And I always say to Bill, you'd rather be doing it than watching it. And, you know, take advantage of the situation. And I think, too, when players are nervous, they can do great things. You can hit the ball farther. Your focus is more precise. You know, your confidence is at a height. And you hit the ball longer. Enjoy that part of it. And, you know, put yourself up against it and see what happens. But, you know, you can't shy away from it. You gotta go for it.
Bill, close it out.
Well, I just on that same vein, I remember Jay saying one time, the people that miss a cut are never nervous on the weekend. So if you're nervous, right, you're probably playing for something. And the guys that miss the cut, they're back home sleeping. They're not nervous about anything. They're worried about what they're going to have for breakfast. So being nervous is kind of a reward for being a good player. And if you can't handle it, then chances are you'll have a pretty short career. Wouldn't you say, Jay?
I think couldn't agree more, Bill. Yeah, the best players seem to relish that that stage, being in view in the public eye and performing under a intense pressure. And there's nothing better, you know, to hear this crowd roar. I can kind of remember, you know, when I've hit a good shot in these matches, there's just nothing like the crowd's reaction to a great shot. And boy, when you're performing on stage, wherever it might be, you love to play to a packed house. So it doesn't get any more exciting than this. And the people of Minneapolis in this area, they are great golf fans, and I'm sure they're lifting the spirits of the U.S. team. So it should be an amazing finish here. Today is huge. The USA's got a lead going into Sunday. You got to like their chances, but you're looking at Rory is trying to lead these guys back, and he's arguably the best player in the world right now. He's as hot as they come, so it's going to be a tough go for the U.S. team.
Well, Jay, I can't thank you enough for coming on our show this morning, talking about the Ryder Cup, your experiences. Congratulations on such a wonderful career, family, professional, everything. One of the nicest, humblest people that I know, and your good friend Bill has done a wonderful job this year. Bill, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Jay. It's always a pleasure to be on, Charlie.
And, you know, next time we'll talk more about the results of the Ryder Cup next Saturday on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. And I thank you all for tuning in, and go USA.